The US and Russia have come to the conclusion that there is no military solution to Syria's crisis and all efforts must be focused on a political roadmap. Some US allies, notably Saudi Arabia, still insist President Bashar al-Assad's government should be toppled militarily. Delayed for months, the Geneva II peace conference aims to resolve the crisis through dialogue between the Syrian government and the yet undecided opposition that includes al-Qaeda-affiliated militants bent on continuing a deadly terrorist campaign. So how near is a political solution? This is The Debate.
Syria, the third year of an armed deadlock. Not a day goes by without an attack or a counterattack. In every corner, the battle is raging. Either a region falls into the hands of the insurgents, who enjoy the support of foreign countries, or is reclaimed by Syrian government forces. No clear-cut advance or gain, though the army seems to have been gaining more and more ground. The deadlock in war fronts relatively echoes the failure of diplomatic efforts. The international community has long been trying to gather the main players in the unrest around one table to reach a compromise in a bid to end the ongoing armed conflict. The proposed conference is a sequel to the first Geneva conference, which was led by previous United Nations and Arab League Special Envoy for Syria, Kofi Annan, in June last year. Several dates have been announced for the proposed meeting. The latest was late this November, but this is not certain either. On Tuesday, UN and Arab League envoy for Syria, Lakhdar Brahimi, heading a UN delegation, met Russian and American representatives at the UN's European headquarters in Geneva, Switzerland. The three-way talks have been aimed at discussing key details of the planned conference, including the exact timing and the guest list. A close source to the negotiations says the conference won't be held earlier than December, but he hasn't given any further information. The government of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has time and again said it will take part in the Geneva II talks, without any preconditions. Damascus' red line is attempt to oust Bashar al-Assad by force or under pressure. On the other hand, the umbrella group of Syria's foreign-backed external opposition, which calls itself the Syrian National Coalition, says it won't be present at the talks if the meeting doesn't seek to remove Assad from power. The SNC's remarks are also echoed by Qatar, one of the main backers of the insurgents in Syria. Qatar's Emir Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani says unconditional talks will be in vain. Iran is a key player in the region and is a close ally of Syria for years. There have been calls for Iran to participate in the Geneva II negotiations. Russia is one of the countries who've been calling for Tehran's participation.
All those with influence on the situation must certainly be invited to the conference. This includes all Syria's neighbors. This includes pretty much all countries of the Persian Gulf. This includes not only Arab countries, but also Iran.
For now, with diplomatic fronts remaining in a gridlock, the ground is laid for further insurgency and bloodshed, and a severe humanitarian crisis. The Syrians, observers believe, are the only losers of such dilly-dallying.
You're watching The Debate. Joining me now live from Washington is Mr. Lawrence J. Korb with the Center for American Progress. And also with us live from Baltimore is Mr. Lawrence Freeman with the Executive Intelligence Review. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us. I'll put my first question to our guest in Washington. Mr. Korb, do you agree that there is no military solution to the crisis? I mean, Saudi Arabia is insisting still that military intervention is the only way out.
I certainly agree with that, and that's something that our chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Martin Dempsey, has said that you have to have a negotiated solution. That's the only way to resolve this crisis.
Mr. Freeman in Baltimore, would you say that a military solution is not going to work? We have to look for a political solution. And if you agree, what is in the way of that political solution?
There's no question that the solution to Syria is not going to be the overthrow of the government of Assad. Now, the negotiations are stalled because the opposition, the insurgents, backed by various Gulf countries, including Saudi Arabia and Qatar and others, are making preconditions for this conference that Assad has to go. And that is not going to be acceptable. That the Saudi government is particularly enraged right now. They're lashing out at the United States and other governments for not backing their plan to overthrow the government of Assad. And this, if that were to occur, this would set off a chain of events that could lead to a much larger war. And the insurgents themselves, if they were in control of the country, would carry out bloody murder throughout the country and would lead to confrontations with the neighboring countries as well. Mm-hmm. So the insurgents are not qualified to run the government, and we have to have a peaceful political solution.
So, Mr. Korb, I'd like to have your view on this as well. I guess there Mr. Freeman was saying that insurgents, when they're asking for some conditions to be set before negotiations can work, I mean, they're saying that President Assad should go. But do you think this is actually what is stalling dialogue and the political solution? Mr. Korb. Mr. Korb, can you hear me? It looks like we've just lost our connection there with Mr. Korb. We'll try to bring him back, though, just as soon as we can. Before he comes, I'll put this next question to Mr. Freeman in Baltimore. Now, Mr. Freeman, we heard Saudi Arabia speaking, the foreign minister, just a day ago about Iran's role in Syria, accusing Iran of militarily intervening in Syria. And some people analyzing those statements were saying that these kinds of remarks are meant to kill the chance for Iran to take part in the Geneva II conference to end the crisis. What do you think?
It's true. The Saudis right now and their support for the insurgents are the biggest obstacle to a solution. And the idea that of keeping Iran out of negotiations is also designed to make the effort less successful. Iran should be involved. It's a regional power. But the larger question right now is that the Saudis, and they have a certain backing from sections in the British political government, are hell-bent on preventing a solution, knowing full well that if we don't find a solution, that this will escalate to greater war and chaos in the region. So the Saudis right now are really an enemy of the United States, and they're an enemy of mankind for stalling, stopping, and trying to sabotage peaceful solutions to the Syrian crisis.
Well, I'm hearing that Mr. Korb is now back with us from Washington. Mr. Korb, who do you blame for stalling the political process?
Well, I mean, basically, I think you have some of the rebel groups because they want preconditions before they come. They want President Assad to agree to step aside before that. The United States has been saying, no, no preconditions. I think that's one of the problems that you have. As far as I can see, that's the main problem, because what you need to have is the Assad government and all of the rebel groups come together to decide on the future of their country. The United States and Russia can facilitate the conference, but it's really going to be up to those people to make the decision.
Well, the thing is, Mr. Korb, the United States is still saying in public announcements that it thinks Assad doesn't have a place in the future of Syria, that Assad has to go. Doesn't this go against what you're saying there about the U.S. position?
Well, the United States position, you know, when the rebellion started, the president of the United States basically said, until he leaves, you're not going to resolve this. But the United States position basically now is that we want to have a negotiation with no preconditions. That's the position of the United States right now. I think the hope is that he will go. Remember, his term expires in 2014. So the hope is that they will choose a new government. But the United States is not putting on any preconditions right now.
Mr. Freeman, do you think then that the United States is actually changing its position, that it's now agreed to acquiesce and look at the current situation and change its way of approaching it? I mean, we did have reports that Mr. Brahimi, on behalf of the United States and other countries, had been proposing that Assad be part of a transitional government, although Mr. Brahimi later denied that, but there have been reports like it.
President Obama, even in statements a month ago, was saying that President Assad of Syria is not part of the future of Syria. Now, that is, Mr. Kaur may be correct that the official position of the State Department is different, but President Obama has made his point very clear, repeatedly, that Assad is not part of the future. And this itself is a problem. Don't forget, up to a few months ago, we were planning on 85 airstrike attacks in Syria. And at the last minute, this was called off due to an unprecedented outpouring of opposition by the American people, which was 100-1 against intervention, plus some very clever flanking operations by the Russians to prevent this attack. So the United States was forced. President Obama, who wanted to go to war, was forced to back down. So that's a positive development. But we don't have really, from the president, real leadership in finding a solution in Syria. I think the military, under General Dempsey, has been outspoken, and still is, against intervention. So there's enough forces that have acted to prevent this war from going to the next level. But President Obama has a long history of working with the Saudis and working with the Muslim Brotherhood against the interest of national governments in the region. Mm. And that, to me, is a very significant problem which we're going to have to overcome.
Yes, well, on that point, Mr. Korb, we know that the United States has been working alongside its allies in the Persian Gulf region, specifically and notably Saudi Arabia. If the United States is now backing the idea of talks without preconditions, no kind of military strike on Syria, no talk of Assad's removal, do you think this is going to go well with its allies like Saudi Arabia or the other Persian Gulf states?
Well, you've seen the Saudis have been very critical of the Obama administration on the points that you raise. The United States is providing non-lethal assistance to some of the rebel groups, not all of the rebel groups, from a humanitarian point of view. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that the American people have spoken, the president responds to the wishes of the American people. And as my colleague in Baltimore said, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff has basically said he doesn't see a military solution. And after Assad agreed to get rid of his chemical weapons, which President Obama had said was the red line, then basically now they're moving toward a negotiated solution. Will that make Saudi Arabia happy? No. Will it make some of the Arab League countries happy? No. But don't forget, the Arab League has now said that they endorse negotiations.
Well, I'd like to raise some of the issues you just mentioned there. But before we do that, we're going to take a look at some of the comments that have been posted on our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
As you can see, there is no absolute winner in the war in Syria, which means there is no military solution in sight. Any political solution should be decided by the Syrian people in free and just elections. Yes, the Geneva II should only agree on a roadmap to end the crisis, but every agreement must be put to a referendum. Russia and the US are the only winners of keeping the crisis going on in Syria. Russia is regaining a leading world role, and the US is dragging Moscow to the region and its troubles. Both are turning the energy-rich region into a failed region, and they can decide for everything about oil and gas. The US is happy that Al-Qaeda is busy fighting Lebanon's Hezbollah and Assad's government in Syria, while Russia is enjoying the struggle between Middle Eastern countries and wasting the oil and gas incomes on sectarian strife. Now, these two superpowers are deciding the fate of the Middle East, just as France and Britain did decades ago.
Some of the comments posted on our Facebook page. I'll go right to a guest in Baltimore, Mr. Freeman. Now, a guest there earlier on was speaking about the Saudi role in Syria. A commentator is referring to the US and the Russian role. Now, one question here is, the thing is, unlike what Mr. Cope was telling us, Saudi Arabia has been accused, at least, of providing weapons and military aid to the insurgents, even of giving weapons to extremist groups and to terrorists. And the question here would be, what has the United States done about that? I mean, it's at least tacitly been supporting what Saudi Arabia has been doing. What do you think about that?
They have been supporting. I mean, the fact of the matter is that the Saudis have been arming the insurgents. The Saudis have been funding a training base in Lebanon, which has been staffed by American intelligence operatives. The United States has looked the other way repeatedly on arms going directly to the insurgents. Don't forget, right now, you have more foreign jihadists in Syria than you ever had in Afghanistan or Iraq. So this is not a legitimate civil war. This is an outside intervention to overthrow the government of Assad. And the President Obama has been supporting this effort, just like he supported the effort of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt. So his policy is the wrong policy. There have been other forces in the government and in the US military who have intervened to try to prevent the disaster. But look, the Saudi role is very obvious. It's known. It's been exposed in every publication in the United States and the West. And the United States has allowed it to go on. And the United States has a real problem. And President Obama has a real problem because there's an effort in Congress to release 28 classified pages from the 9/11 Commission of 2002 that identify the Saudi role in the 9/11 attacks in the United States. And these pages were classified under George Bush, and they remain classified under President Obama, and there's a call in the Congress to declassify them. So the U.S. and Obama in particular are protecting Saudi interests in the United States and around the world and in Syria.
Well, Mr. Korb, you see, the problem with the United States policy is just this, what we're hearing, of course, by its critics. They're saying that the United States, when it could have stopped the terrorism, when it could have acted against the Al-Qaeda groups, it didn't do enough. It allowed that Al-Qaeda presence to spread. It didn't do anything about the Saudi support. And now, based on its own interests, they're saying, and the situation as it's unfolding, it's deciding to change its approach. So they're saying we shouldn't see the U.S. policy as an honest and sincere effort to help end the crisis.
Well, I think you have to put this into context. This rebellion against Assad started peacefully. It was part of the Arab Spring, the same developments you had in Tunisia, same developments you had in Egypt, where the people basically wanted to share in the economic and political power of their country. Assad used horrible tactics to kill them to begin with. That's what fueled the arms going in originally to the people who were slaughtered for no good reason. Then, as the conflict dragged on, these extremist groups came in. They were not there to begin with. And the Saudis were arming what I would call the rebels, the people who were crushed initially by the Assad regime, just as his father crushed killed 40,000 people about 30 years ago. So that's basically what happened. Now, no doubt about the fact that a lot of these extremist groups have come in. The United States has been very careful to make sure that the aid they give doesn't go to these extremist groups. It goes to the legitimate
people who were
oppressed by the Assad regime.
The question that people raise here is exactly this point. How can they ensure that the aid or funds are not going to reach the terrorists? They say that's quite impossible on the ground. We also had reports of the use of chemical weapons even by the insurgents that were raised by the government. But quite surprisingly, we're not seeing the type of maybe international effort to find anything about that. We even heard that there had been efforts to stop the UN team from going and investigating the insurgents' use of chemical agents.
Well, if you read the UN report after the August 21st use, it's very clear that Assad was the one who used used chemical weapons. I mean, that's all you have to do is look where it came from. Now, because it's very clear that you have a lot of these extremist groups in there, you need to have a peaceful solution. And I have no doubt that if the people in Syria, the people who were there before all this rebellion started, were allowed to vote, Assad would be voted out. So the fact of the matter is, if you have a conference and you let the people in Syria decide, I am absolutely certain that they will vote him out. Well, and in the same way, to say the United States supported the Muslim Brotherhood by Morsi? No, we supported Morsi because he won the election.
Well, Mr. Cox, sorry for stopping you there. We are quickly running out of time. I just have time to give the last remarks to Mr. Freeman. As a conclusion, Mr. Freeman, we are at least agreeing that the extremists, the terrorists, are now the main threat in Syria. They have to go. How can this happen? What is preventing this from happening? The Syrian government has been saying, how can we enter into dialogue when terrorism is continuing in our country?
We have to have an all-out effort to crush the Saudi influence in the area. And you can see that they're livid by their actions in the UN in response to the fact that they didn't get their way. These regime change policies, which we saw in Libya, pushed by President Obama, Susan Rice, Samantha Powers, and others, that overthrew Gaddafi, have caused a catastrophe of destruction across the Sahel and Western Africa. We don't want another regime change in Syria that causes more catastrophe, chaos, and war.
Yes.
So we ought to shut the Saudis down, give them a rough time, back off, get the Israelis to back off, and as my colleague said, let the people of Syria actually decide among themselves, not told what to do by the outside forces of Saudi Arabia or even the United States.
Okay, thank you very much. I'd like to thank our guests there with us from Baltimore, Mr. Lawrence Freeman with the Executive Intelligence Review, and in Washington, Mr. Lawrence J. Korb with the Center for American Progress. Thank you so much for joining us here on The Debate. From me, Homa Lizgi, until our next program, it's goodbye.